You are now listening to the Beer Buzz Network. Cheers. What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Beer Geek Radio, presented to you by Beer Buzz. And it is I, the jovial pessimist, the helpful hater, your host, Brad Greider. And as usual, I'm joined by two good-looking gents, my co-hosts.
Well, all right, stupid Steve. My name is Chris Martin, a.k.a. Francisco Fuggles.
And this episode is brought to you by the Los Angeles International Beer Competition. For more information, you can find them at labeercomp.com. And what is this episode all about? Well, that's what we're going to tell you now. But before we do that, let's get into the Ask a Beer Geek. And you're not going to get a question for us today. You're actually going to get a question that asked by a loyal fan by the name of Dusty Sharp. Dusty Sharp says, with all the session IPAs that are abound in stores and all over the place, when are you guys going to do an episode dedicated to just session IPAs? Mm. Well, the answer is today.
Your lucky day, Dusty.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's especially dedicated to you.
Yeah. So huge shout out to Dusty Sharp for listening to every single episode. I don't think anybody in the world bugs us more than him to produce content. So we're glad to have you as a listener, Dusty. So thanks for the great idea. And you know what? Yeah. It's not too difficult considering how many awesome session IPAs are coming out. We're also pretty spoiled living where we live.
Yeah.
True.
So
we got a lot of beer here.
We're in an IPA haven.
Yeah.
And it would behoove the breweries not to jump in on the craze.
Yeah, well, that's exactly.
And I also want to give one last shout out to the SoCal Brew Crew on Instagram. They're also people that follow us all the time. They like all our stuff. And you know what? Quite honestly, they just asked for a shout out. And so they got one.
Yep.
Hey, so come join us sometime, guys.
That'd be awesome.
Love to have you.
Let's get stupid.
So let's get into some good sessionable IPAs. And we've got four for you today. We've got the Great Divide, Lasso, Lagunitas Daytime, Stone Go-To, and Pizza Port Ponto, a favorite of our very own Francisco Fuggles.
Oh, man. You could probably tell in the tone of my voice, and I'm super excited about this episode because I ain't.
You can't see the table, but there's one of each, except for the Ponto. There are two cracked cans open specifically for him.
I made sure there were two Pontos here, because I'm going to go through that really quick. Yeah.
So you keep hearing us refer to session IPAs. If you're hiding under a rock and are unaware of what a session IPA is, what, first of all, is the word sessionable even mean, first off? Because we're going to be using that word a lot today. A session beer is typically a nickname given to a beer. It could be any beer, really, that's really drinkable, low in alcohol, low in intensity, that can be consumed in great numbers. So typically, I mean, if you're going by the numbers with session IPAs, it's usually 5% ABV or less. Yeah.
Anything quaffable.
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 All right.
We're vocabulary lesson today.
We're getting classy here, folks.
You can tell he's excited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm bringing out the big guns today.
Quaffable. That doesn't sound like a good word.
It doesn't.
And I do want to state that we're also not going to be providing you with a concrete, you know, really comprehensive beer review for each one of these four. We're just going to be sipping on each one of them as we kind of go through style guidelines and what we think of each one. So if you're looking for a comprehensive beer review, you can stick around. At the end of the episode, we're going to be doing another IPA. Not sessionable, but pretty close.
We're going to dissect that beer. We're going to take its organs out and then eat them.
Oh, or drink them.
Drink them.
Wow. Yeah. Is something going on that I'm not aware of? I mean, you okay?
Steven's taking on multiple personalities this show. I'm not sure where he's going.
No, it's just,
neither am I. So which one do you guys have in your glasses at the moment?
Well, right now I am enjoying the Stone Go-To IPA. It's delicious.
I've gone through. I have had Stone Go-To before, and obviously I've had Ponto. Yeah. I had not had Lasso or Daytime, so I drank those two really quickly first, just so I had an idea of what they tasted like, and then I immediately poured more Ponto into my glass.
He's whoring himself out to the entire table here.
Yeah, and dear people at Pizza Port, you owe him royalties.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Or just more Ponto.
Yeah. supply of Ponto, I'm good.
Yeah, you owe him royalties, and you can pay him in the form of 4 6-packs of Ponto.
Yep.
So it won't cost you money. Not much, at least.
I just had this really disturbing image of him, like, on a beach pouring two cans of Ponto all over himself.
I don't know what's disturbing about that. That sounds wonderful.
It sounds pretty reasonable. So maybe Pete Support can hook that up and make that happen for you.
That'll be our promo shots.
Oh, great. So as we said, sessionable is low alcohol, consume in great quantity. So basically, your beer you want to take to the ball game, the river, the desert, camping, something that's really flavorful and doesn't, you know, get you really drunk right off the bat.
Because when you get drunk when you're partying, you don't want it after three or four beers. You want to drink at least like 12 of them.
So, and the second word in the combination is IPA. We're drinking sessionable IPAs. Mm-hmm. Typically, your IPA, you know, your style guidelines for IPAs are anywhere from 40 to 70 IBUs, which means, you know, pretty assertively hopped, and 6 to 15 SRMs, which means, you know, like it could go anywhere from like a light gold color to actually like an amber. You've seen IPAs that are a little darker in color that mm-hmm. look almost copper. And then 5.5 to 7.5 ABV, as long as we're getting technical.
Right.
There's so many breweries out there that push those limits, but those are the traditional BJCP guidelines for an IPA. Now with what we're drinking today, obviously everything is 5% or less. I think the Lasso is the highest at 5 even.
Right.
But Stone Go To is 4.5. I think Ponto is
I should know this
4.5.
By heart.
It's 4.5 as well. Yeah.
It's also 4.5, and I think Lagunitas is 4.65. Yeah. So everything meets the criteria of sessionable. So that's what we're drinking so far. I've got Daytime. It's on the label. It says fractional IPA.
What does that mean?
It's fractions, like when you're in school.
Yeah,
over four.
Yeah, but what is a fractional IPA? Is it like a fraction of this kind?
It's like a quarter of an IPA or a half of an IPA.
It's basically it's their attempt at a figure of speech. They're not actually trying to give you a scientific, like precise fraction. Like this is 7/8 of an IPA.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's that's just a clever way of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you.
Damn Lagunitas. So I'm sure people out there are saying, well, what's the difference between a session IPA and a pale ale?
That's a good question, actually.
That's a very good question.
Very fair question.
And, well, the difference is the style guidelines for an American pale ale are 30 to 45 IBU. So still kind of assertive, but a little less. 5 to 14 SRM, so very similar in color, and 4.5 to 6.2 ABV. So basically what we're dealing with is similar color, slightly less assertively hopped, and a little less alcohol. So basically what we're dealing with here in a session IPA is a mix of both. Very mm-hmm. assertively hopped beers and less alcohol. So, you know, you can drink more of them in quantity but still get that flavor punch.
So just to kind of put it all together, it's an assertively hopped pale ale. Kind
of. Yeah.
It's less than 5%.
Right. But it's also a very very genius marketing gimmick because we're seeing what's happening with this style. It depends. I mean, at the end of the episode, we're going to get into what our verdict is of not only just these beers, but where we think this craze is even headed. So we'll get into that a little bit more before we do that. So I want to talk specifically about the four that we've got so far. Chris has sang the praises of Ponto for quite some time now.
I've mentioned the word Ponto in these last two episodes more than I've said the word Ponto in my entire life, I think. But I love Ponto. I love this is getting into another style of IPAs, the West Coast style IPA, which tends to be has a little bit more of that salty, earthy profile to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that Ponto is very much a sessionable West Coast style IPA. And I'm a fan of the West Coast style, and I think that this is just it's so assertive in the hoppiness, and it's so light in the malt profile. Like, all you get is hop. It's like hop water, but in the best way possible.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't sound very appetizing, but it just all comes together in a magical way.
There's a lot of descriptions that you use in beer that just don't sound appetizing, but they're really good.
Yeah, and especially with a mix of you know, in combination with each other.
Yeah.
So, in doing research for this episode, obviously, session IPAs have pretty much started showing up this season or just late last season. So I kind of wanted to dig a little deeper and find out, okay, well, is this a new concept? Is this a concept that's been around for a while? The earliest origins I could find of the session IPA was actually a homebrew discussion that happened about 4.5 years ago where people were talking about the possibility of a sessionable IPA that had the low ABV of a pale but the hop assertiveness of an IPA, something up in the IBU range of like 60 to 70. And a lot of people were like, that's just can't be done. It's not possible. And then I also read another article where somebody was talking about session IPAs and said he tried one, I think, 3 years ago and said, this is the future of IPA.
Hmm.
And I'd say, you know what? Vegas betting odds would have been against him back then. But you know what? Now he'd be a millionaire.
Did you, anywhere in your research, find who claims to have the first session IPA?
I didn't.
I was trying to find that, but I couldn't find it anyway.
Yeah, I was looking around mostly when I looked at the history. That was mostly what I was looking for, was who has the claim of the first session IPA. Because now that everybody's got them, and we also, I mean, we have one Colorado version and three California versions, more are going to be popping up.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen several in the works. I was just remarking to Steven earlier that Flying Dog is going to come out with one.
Yep.
Sierra Nevada's got one out there called Nooner. They're all over the place. I've, to be perfectly honest with you, I think the first major commercial example is Founders All Day IPA. Say that because I have seen that style around. I've heard people mention it for the better part of a year to a year and a half, maybe even 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's a 4 to 4.5% IPA with an assertive hop IBU range. So I got to say, I think they were probably the first major brewery to do it commercially.
Leave it to a brewery called Founders.
Yeah. Yeah, in Michigan, of all places.
Right? Go figure.
So, Chris, I actually just poured this Lasso, and it kind of took me by surprise. At first, I didn't know what to think, but yeah, you know what? It has a strong, nutty character.
It does.
It's really good.
The Lasso from Great Divide is actually surprisingly malty for a beer that's only 5%.
Mm-hmm.
It actually is a more of a balance of hop and malt.
I was expecting more malt in the flavor. You get a lot of it in the aroma.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, this is going to be nice
and
malty.
And it definitely has
the most
SRM of any of the beers.
Yes, absolutely. And it even still is not even, by itself, is not even all that dark. I mean, some specific stats for you guys. Stone Go-To clocks in at 65 IBU, so it pushes the threshold of an American IPA, American IPA, but it's only 4.5%, sitting nice and comfortably in that pale ale range.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's basically like the best of both worlds. Ponto is 4.5%. We don't have the IBUs on it, but Lagunitas Daytime is 54 IBU, so a little lower than Go-To, but 4.65% alcohol.
Well, that 10 points of difference is remarkable, because when I try the Go-To, I get a really strong alpha acid presence, and when I try the Daytime, I don't at all. So it's remarkable how much 10 points makes a difference.
Right. And another thing,
it is a subjective scale.
Yeah, and it's basically all it's doing is measuring the alpha acids.
Mm-hmm.
Stone uses what they call a new technique called hop bursting, which all that means basically is they add hops late addition to the kettle in the boiling process. So you would think it doesn't actually have as long to get, you know, all that alpha acid out of there, but actually there's a lot more hop flavor in that than is in Daytime.
Oh yeah.
And it's not close to me, if you ask.
No, not even.
I'm going to pour myself some Ponto.
The only beer that even comes close to hop profile and alpha acid to the Stone would probably be Ponto. Lasso, like Steven said, has a little nuttier character, a little bit sweeter body to it, and definitely a fuller body than any beer in the bunch.
Right. But you would expect that sitting all the way up at 5%.
Right.
I mean, even a tenth of a percent more, and it wouldn't be considered a session IPA by most people's standards.
Really?
So. Yes, if 5% is the cutoff.
Oh, okay.
So I'm drinking Ponto right now from Pizza Port, and I'm actually really enjoying this beer.
I had a session IPA from a company. The name escapes me right now, but it was actually like 3.5% ABV.
Oh wow!
It was very light. It was light like you expect it to be, but it definitely did have a bitterness to it. It was very interesting.
Yeah, and that's one of the trickiest things about that is brewing a big, flavorful beer and keeping the alcohol way down. And what people confuse, in fact, is hops don't contribute any alcohol to a beer. But the problem is when you add hops during the boiling process, the longer you boil a beer, the more water evaporates out of it, the more grain and more alcohol you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very tricky process to be able to brew these only for so long to get enough hop for them to still be considered an IPA, but get just as a little amount of alcohol.
Right.
So it's a perfect balance. And it's, I would imagine, not as easy of a style to brew as, say, hey, I'm going to brew a double IPA or I'm going to brew a single IPA. More ingredients go into that, more cost. But the brewing process, I would believe, to be trickier.
Mm-hmm. I've got an interesting question for you guys. Since we're talking about session IPAs, do you think that there are any other styles that might lend themselves well to having a sessionable companion? Like
what do
sessionable
you mean?
Brown ale,
yeah,
sessionable
yeah.
We have dry stouts, which tend to be more on the sessionable side.
Yeah, and Irish dry stouts.
I was thinking brown ale. It's funny that you mentioned that. I was thinking like a sessionable brown ale would be nice.
Yeah, you could do a stout or a brown ale would work sessionable if you kept it below 5%. Mm-hmm. Like an Irish dry stout typically is between 4% and 5% is the lowest ABV right. of all stout styles. But a lot of problem that you run into with some of the other styles like browns or porters is that you like to have a nice malt backbone.
Yeah, right.
To contribute to that toffee nuttiness.
So it would have to be a lighter
exactly.
style.
Right. You might actually start to lose what you like about that beer.
Well, yeah, a good instance would be an English barley wine. That wouldn't be good.
No.
Session barley wine.
No, I think a session barley wine is about as oxymoron as you get.
Session Russian Imperial
yeah,
Stout.
Yeah, there you go. It's a sessionable bourbon barrel aged.
Yeah. I guess, I'm trying to think of lighter styles like lagers, but they're already down there in ABV anyway.
Right. And there's like you said, you could do browns, you could do porters or stouts, and they're just dark, but do they have enough malty backbone that you would be looking for in that style?
Right.
And at such a low ABV, if you have an Irish dry stout, it's super thin in body. Mm-hmm. And I loved Irish dry stouts, but, it all depends on the person and what they like.
Or the mood you're in when you're drinking. And there's several things to get into it.
Absolutely.
It's just a question that popped into my head, but the more I thought about it, the more you're right. It's, you're going to lose what you like about those bigger mm-hmm. styles if you try to cut them.
Right. So, what's our verdict on these beers? And overall, in the general style, what are we thinking so far on these beers? What do you guys like about them so far, other than Chris and Ponto?
Ponto!
If you want to gush, you can.
I've gushed enough.
Yeah, just make sure you hit up Pizza Port for a check.
I've gushed enough.
The go-to IPA, I really dig. Very citrusy, as you mentioned, but specifically, I get lemon, and I really like that. That's a flavor I usually don't get in an IPA.
I think that the go-to is indeed the most flavorful of what we've got on the table.
I would say it's between that and Lasso, because that nuttiness that comes through is pretty strong.
I probably should, been more specific then. I guess in terms of hoppy, citrusy, herbal flavors, I think go-to takes
definitely.
The cake.
Lasso, I get what Steven's saying, though, because Lasso definitely does have a strong flavor profile, and I think most of it comes from the malt, being 5%. But, I just poured go-to into my glass, and that is by far and away the best tropical, citrusy hop character
you get. It's amazing.
Even more so than Ponto. Ponto just hits me personally because it's my style of IPA.
Yeah, absolutely. We know which one Chris likes the most. I think you guys can pick which one I like the most. Yeah. What about you, Steven?
Mine is go-to.
I think go-to is my favorite out of the four.
Lasso is a good second.
I think Lasso is pretty complex in how they were able to do it and get that much malt balance with hop to keep the alcohol just at the cutoff line.
My least favorite would actually have to be the Lagunitas Daytime. That it wasn't bad, but it was
right there with you guys.
When you have beers like Go-To or Lasso or the Ponto, it's just it didn't really stand up to it.
I think also Ponto kicks ass because it comes in a can.
Hell yeah!
That means I could take it to the beach.
That's a whole other episode, man. Talking about the canning versus bottle debate.
Yeah, so we won't get into that just now, but. Definitely love cans. I love bottles, too.
I was really surprised by Lasso, guys. I shouldn't be because Great Divide does awesome, awesome beers. Mm-hmm. I love most everything that Great Divide does, but I had not had it before. And I just think Worlds of Ponto and Stone Go-To was amazing. But Lasso really held up really well.
Yeah, I'm liking it. It's a good change from what we have up here.
Yeah.
They're very, I don't want to say traditional, but they have a more, they're very hop forward.
Yeah,
and this one's not not the one I'm about to pour, but Lasso is not so much.
Definitely a different take on the style that still mm-hmm. works, so I really enjoy that. So basically our verdict is, where do we think the style is going to go? Is this something that's going to hang around for just a short time as like a flash in the pan, or is it here to stay?
You know what? I think the trend of it being so everybody's trying to dig into this, that might die off, but I think it's something that's here to stay in the long run.
I definitely think it's here to stay. It's got everything going for it. Yeah. You get all the flavor of the IPA, really, and you get half the alcohol. So you're going to be able to drink this anytime, anywhere, any amount. And I lost my train of thought. Help me here, Brett.
I can step in really quick. I kind of agree with Steven. I think there's a lot of hoopla surrounding the style right now. But I think ultimately people are going to be looking for a big flavorful beer that they can drink that doesn't overwhelm them with alcohol. That something has a packs a punch in flavor, is sessionable, something they could take to a ball game, the beach, the desert, camping, anything. And it's something that still has the flavor that they're looking for. Yeah, and doesn't and something they can drink in quantity so you're not drunk by the second one. Yeah. And you could last all night and have a good time. I think this is a good time style, and I think it's these are good time beers.
Yeah. It'll give you plenty of opportunity to do something stupid later down the road and then
Where I was going with my before I lost my train of thought is I was trying to think of negatives, reasons this wouldn't last. And the only negative I have for this session IPA thing is that I tend to drink a lot of them in one sitting and I have to pee more. Like that's really my only negative. And that's not even a negative.
one beef on the style that I myself have had, and I've heard a lot of other people have had too. People see session IPA, they realize, you know, less brewing ingredients to get the beer to where it is on the, you know, ABV and everything else. So why are they the same price or even in some cases more? I've seen certain places charge $14 for a six-pack of Go-To IPA, which I think is a crime.
That's a ridiculous markup.
And to, you've kind of touched on what I was about to say, is that you're going to get your diehard IPA fans. They're like, oh, they're not even real IPAs. They're not, you know, that's not a double. That's not even a real single, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, there will be those people that want that big kick in the tongue, you know, that these don't
And those
provide.
Are good, but, I mean, just... You know,
but those people are closed-minded and they don't really appreciate beer.
And and people, I don't care how much you know about a beer and how much you dedicate yourself to one style. If you dedicate yourself to one style, you are not a beer fan. That style's fan.
As far as price points go, I can see them. I don't necessarily want my session IPAs to be less than my IPA. I'll have a problem if they cost more than a regular IPA. But I don't have a problem with them being the same price as a regular IPA because there is a lot of ingredients that go into making session IPAs. You drink it and the taste profile isn't the same, but the amount of hops that you have to put into the beer late in the boil to give it that flavor is probably double what would go in a regular IPA. Because if you put the same amount of hops that you're putting in a regular IPA that late in the boil, you're not going to get that full flavor profile.
Yeah.
So there's going to be more going in.
One legitimate concern about the style that I've read about and I've heard, and I'd say it's actually a pretty good, a pretty legitimate concern, is session IPAs will not sit on the shelves long and still maintain quality because they don't have alcohol as a preservative. They don't hold up as much, and the flavors are going to wither away much faster than in a single or a double IPA. So if stores aren't properly keeping them, they will be a misrepresentation of the style, and somebody's going to buy a bottle of Go-To IPA that's 3, 4, 5 months old, and it's just going to be completely off the cliff, and that might turn somebody off to not only session IPAs, but IPAs in general, and possibly even craft beer as a whole, and that is a legitimate concern.
I want to test this theory. I think this is a good BGR episode, or maybe just like a segue or something. Let's grab a session IPA. Let's sit on it for 4 or 5 months and see how it tastes.
Absolutely. Let's see if we can simulate the environment of, you know, fluorescent artificial lighting, and we can keep the temperature pretty reasonable. Yeah. We're not going to put this thing in the microwave.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, yeah.
I'm kind of curious. You piqued my curiosity with that because that's a point I had not thought of before.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this is our take on session IPAs. You guys have got our verdict. You guys know which one we're drinking. We recommend picking them all up simply because you can drink a ton of them and they pack a ton of flavor.
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, definitely. So that's our episode on session IPAs. Stay tuned for just a few moments. We're going to be at you guys with an actual comprehensive review of the newly released Hangar 24's Betty IPA. So stay tuned for Beer Geek Radio. My name's Brad and I'm your host.
This is your co-host, Steven.
And this is Francisco Fuggles.
What's happening? Back with this week's beer review. We're featuring Hangar 24's Betty IPA, their newest release. And it's a single IPA that clocks in at 6.5% ABV and 68 IBUs. So right there at that single IPA threshold. Really stoked to try this one. You might have heard, it's the first new beer they've released in six packs in 4 years.
Yeah.
So this beer has a long lineage. You guys have heard of it from for the last year. It's been called Experimental IPA if you've seen it.
Oh, yeah. I've been to the tasting room several times. This Hangar 24 is right in my backyard, and I've tried multiple versions of that experimental IPA.
Yeah.
And I got to say, the first one that they did back in May of 2013, like right after that AirFest celebration, that was my favorite version. And they kept tweaking it, and it kept getting less desirable for me personally.
That's funny.
So I'm kind of curious to see how this is going to come off.
Right. Yeah, then this is a single IPA that's hopped with Citra, Mosaic, Simcoe, and Centennial hops. So what I expect going into this is a nice blend of citrusy and, you know, floral and earthy hop. Obviously, Citra and Mosaic are two very, very popular hops right now. You're going to see those around in just about every IPA, double IPA, pale ale. If it's being produced anytime in the last year, you're going to see those two hops most likely. So, like I said, let's dig in on the aroma.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, I get a subdued kind of a tropical notes. I mean,
floral.
I get some floral tropical citrus. It's nowhere near as intense as like what we're used to with double IPA, but it shouldn't really be.
But it has that signature Hangar 24 profile, very floral.
Right, right.
It's, I'm getting a hint of like orange peel, and a little bit of salt. It's not really overwhelming my nose.
But I'm not getting salt in the aroma, but yeah, I get the orange peel.
Nice. And then, you know what? One thing that I think particularly, before we even get into the taste, one thing where I think this beer shines is the label. I think, Chris, you can chime
really
in
like
on this.
Label.
The label's really
kick-ass.
Oh, yeah.
No, like we said, this beer has a long history. And in the press release that they did, they said that this beer was inspired by Betty Grable in the late 40s and how the soldiers used to put pinup models on their their airplanes, and we all know Hangar 24 has a long history with aviation, and I think that they just knocked it out of the park with the label. The label is
Google
beautiful.
B-24 bomber, and I'm sure you'll see half the pics with a picture very reminiscent, if not the same picture.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful label.
Yeah, it's really cool story how it came about, you know, being inspired by World War II planes and 1940s Betty Grable. It just kind of seemed like a natural fit for them to call this Betty IPA. And, you know, the marketing and the label and all that just seems to really work. But, yeah, I mean, we talked about this beer at the beginning. The first iteration was called Experimental IPA. They did subtle tweaks to get it right, and this is their final version of that beer. So I want to try it. I think we should get into the taste.
Let's dig in, guys. Sláinte.
Cheers.
Yeah, I mean, I dig it. When I get when I kind of breathe in through my nose when I try this beer and I kind of inhale it as I try it, I do get a nice little waft of you know, tropical grapefruit, a little bit of orange peel,
grapefruit,
some nice citrus, a nice floral note. It's not overwhelming, but like I said, we're drinking a single IPA, and a lot of times I guess we're maybe used to drinking big doubles or, you know, super dry hop bombs. It's nothing too overwhelming here. I dig it. I think it works. I can get where you say salty. I can kind of
that was on the nose. On the taste, I do get the salt as well. It's a bit underwhelming. I just I get a little bit of the citrus, but I really expected a lot more intense, in your face, floral kind of character of this beer. I'm not getting. To me, it's salty and it's a little bit nutty. I don't know. I'm having a hard time with it. And by no means a bad beer. I mean, I would drink this beer, but I expected more.
Yeah, and as you said, you liked the actual first batch of experimental IPA better.
Right, right. And I'm not sure how they tweaked it going forward, but yeah, the first one was awesome. It was floral. It was everything that I wanted.
The experimental IPA was one of the beers I made it a point to try at last year's anniversary party, and I actually really did dig it. And I'm actually curious to find out how different this beer is from the original experimental IPA batch.
I don't think we'll ever know.
Because certain kegs went out to certain accounts locally. So, I mean, there was you had the ability to try experimental IPA at several of their accounts. I know a lot of local places got it. I know Eureka Burger had it for a while. I'd be curious to find out what changes this beer underwent before actually becoming Betty IPA. I dig it. I think it's a really good single IPA. I think it is in basically indicative of where single IPAs are now. They're focusing mostly on either dry hopping or late kettle addition and being more flavorful in terms of citrusy and floral hop as opposed to malt and hop balance.
You can definitely tell this is kind of a late addition. I'm giving some alpha acid, but it's minimal.
I'm looking through my glass. I'm seeing a lot of sediment, too.
that's indicative of Hangar 24. Mm-hmm. They're known for sediment in the beer.
Yeah, especially the IPAs get a lot of sediment. I think this beer focuses, like I said, late additions or a lot of dry hopping. Fruity malt or fruity citrusy, as opposed to a malt hop balance. You know what you're used to. Now people call those East Coast IPAs when it's actually just a traditional IPA.
Right.
Yeah, I think I dig it. I think if it were me, in my honest opinion, this is me being honest, I think this should be their flagship IPA over Columbus. That's just me.
Yeah.
And as mediocre as this beer hit me on the palate, I would agree. This is better than Columbus. It really is.
Stats on this beer, too. Like we said, it's 6.5 ABV, so nothing too overwhelming. 68 IBU, so it's right there on the threshold of what you'd expect from a normal American IPA. I'd clock this thing in somewhere between maybe 5 and 7 IBUs. So SRMs, excuse me. So, I mean, it's like a nice gold color, pretty to look at. There's some sediment in there, too, that might scare off some folks.
Get over it, you pussies.
I don't really worry too much about sediment. But, no. I mean, getting into quickly before we get out of here, the verdict. I'm going to go ahead. I mean, you guys want to open the floor here to a verdict? Steven, you go ahead first.
Are we giving a rating?
Yeah.
Yeah, rating out of 5.
Overall. I am going to give this a 4 for a single. This is really good.
I'm going to go with my initial. I've had this before we started recording today, and I gave it a 3.5, and I'm going to stick with that. Because there's just some – I feel like there's something missing – but it's very drinkable. I can drink plenty of this beer. I don't have a problem with it to the fact where I'd call it a drain pour or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's a good IPA, but I think it's middle of the road, so 3.5 is a good spot for me.
Okay. I'm going to stay with 4. I think the first time I rated this beer at a 4, I'm going to stay there. I think it's a good style. I think this beer would benefit maybe from a little bit more of a balance of maybe like an earthy dank hop, because mostly what I get from it is just citrus.
Yeah.
I love citrusy hops, but I think maybe what more people would enjoy would maybe be slightly more of a dank hop or earthy hop to balance that out. But I give it a 4 because I do think it's an awesome single IPA. And considering if I was in the market for another single IPA, I'd probably buy this before a lot of others. But yeah, like it's definitely, I think, indicative of where single IPAs are as a whole right now. I think,
especially on this coast. Yeah, it's really sitting right in the middle, the top of the market, sure. For me personally, there's something missing from this beer.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I mean, you've got our ratings, and this has been Hangar 24's Betty IPA.
Well, it is better. It's better than the Columbus.
Yeah.
Hangar, take note.
This has been Hangar 24's Betty IPA, and for Beer Geek Radio, I'm your host. My name is Brad.
And this is Steven.
And this is Chris.
Cheers.
Cheers.